This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Buckets. We are in the midst, the thick of the playoffs. So I figured, all right, fine, let's talk about it with Billy Scafuri.
You're getting bucket buckets.
Some of our teams are in the midst of the playoffs, Amir. One of our teams is no longer in the midst of anything.
Yeah, it timed up pretty well. Your Knicks, my Lakers, facing elimination within one day of each other. We're recording this after the Knicks were eliminated last night.
Yes.
To the Hawks. And then tonight, my Lakers also could be eliminated. But let's talk about what is certain, which is the Atlanta Hawks kind of figuring out the Knicks.
Pretty quickly.
Very quickly. The first two games made it seem like this baby was going seven.
Everyone was exactly what we thought. This is like, everyone's going to be like a 3-point game every game.
And then they went to Atlanta and something changed for one of the teams and not the other.
Yeah. Trae Young said he'll see us in the A. He saw us in the A. He killed us in the A. Sent us back to the NY. And then we are RIP.
Yeah, it changed quickly, and I'm not quite sure what happened there, because the first two games were so. It seemed like the Knicks should have won game one and lost. Then they should have lost game two and won.
I think,
so I'm like, anything can happen
I think
now.
In all five games, what was apparent was that Atlanta had more talent like on the roster. They had like eight dudes that just simply could all score if they needed to. We were like, by game two, saying like, maybe 2005 Derrick Rose will show up. And it's like, yo, what are we rooting for now? What has happened? You know, like game one, Alec Burks has 27. Game two, like, Derrick Rose goes ham. Then Reggie Bullock shows up. But it's like, that's not sustainable. What the Hawks had every single game was sustainable. And that was ultimately our death bell.
They had some great shoot. Like, I know Bogdanovich was a great shooter, but like, it seemed like Gallo couldn't miss. It seemed like Trae Young could not be slowed down at all whatsoever.
They all seemed to be playing at the top of their game. The one thing that felt backbreaking in most games was Bogdanovich always found a way of like saving a broken play and chucking a three that went in. Like when the score was like, we were trying to bring it from six down to zero. And like the ball would like 2 seconds left on the clock, bounce off of like Capella's foot into his basket. And he just drained the three in like three of the game. So that was one thing where I was like, the ball bounces one way or the other.
That didn't help. And then, of course, the biggest issue for the Knicks was probably the fact that Julius Randle did not play. He looked like the Julius Randle of LA or New Orleans, not like the most improved player this year.
Yeah, that felt psychological to me. Did that feel psychological? Like it didn't feel like the drop-off. He was too skilled to be so unskilled for this playoffs. It seemed like something else had to happen. I don't know if it's the lights are too bright or whatever, but for whatever reason, he just seemed to be back to like bad Julius Randle, of which he wasn't this whole year.
I don't know if it was bad decision-making or just, you know, the old make-or-miss league. If he makes three or more of those shots per 15, they seem like fine games. But for whatever reason, it's always like 5 of 15, 6 of 17, 7 of 20. He just couldn't get a rhythm going.
He had a bit of a, like, I feel the end is near. Like, he maybe felt the comfort of a regular season knowing, like, there's always going to be more games. The season will go on, then the playoffs will occur. But I think it almost felt like he was pressing and panicking with the ball. Like, as opposed to, like, the entire Knicks team, to a certain extent, would just kind of put their head down and try and take it to the rack and then kick it.
Yeah.
You know, so there was no sort of, like, ease, like, comfort in his game. It felt very rushed from the beginning, which, again, just feels like oddly psychological, just like I haven't done this before and I'm scared a little.
Right, and he hadn't. I don't think he had played in the playoffs. Maybe with New Orleans one season?
No, I think this was his first playoffs, him and RJ. Yeah.
Yeah. But then it was also Trae Young's first playoffs, and he looked like it was like a preseason practice game, just like completely in control, comfortable, calm, crowd sitting on him, and him bowing at the end. So that was super impressive.
And not just him, also Ja Morant. Granted, Ja Morant's team only won one game, but like his first two games, he was like 40 and 18. And every time that happens, five bucket listeners tweet at me and they're like, Billy, what did you say? Because he's on fire right now. And anytime you talk shit, he goes ham. So shout out Ja Morant.
I'm pretty sure I saw that his first playoff game ever was the most points ever scored by a Grizzly in any game ever.
Sure. There you go.
That's an awesome thing/sign.
Yes, no doubt. Him and Booker, it seemed like for their first two games, it was like Devin Booker broke the record, which was set yesterday by Ja Morant. And then Ja Morant broke the record by which
they're not scared at all.
So that's the question. Is it psychological where you almost like play better, you like dial in that much more, or you actually get a little bit of stage fright? I mean, only they know the answer to that. But I could see myself going both ways. So it really just comes down to who you are, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed by Atlanta. And like it seemed like they were the better coach team. And it was funny because those two were like the hottest coaches coming down the stretch, them and Monty Williams. Nate McMillan just like did not seem rattled, had a game plan, executed it to perfection, figured out when to double, when to not, crash the paint, don't worry about those other guys, like RJ Barrett also was not making anything, so they didn't necessarily have to stay home on him either.
I mean, the history of those two teams this year was they played three games, the Knicks won all of them, Julius Randle went crazy in all of them. So obviously Julius Randle, that didn't happen in this series. But another thing that didn't happen in most of those games was they had their previous coach. So when Nate McMillan did coach them, it was a much closer game and a much better game. And he just got better as the season went on. Like he turned that team completely around and had them believing. He like let Trae Young just have the ball, you know, completely. And they were the better team. I'm surprised that how I'm not upset this morning. Like even when the game was over, I was like, we were beat. We also overachieved this season. Yeah. Onward. Like it wasn't like a, you know, I dreamed big, but my expectations and my feet were firmly on the ground.
Because coming into this season, like if I would have told you the Knicks make the playoffs, have home court and win a playoff game at MSG, you're like, great, I'll take it 100%. That was amazing.
I would say the only disappointment I have is that on a national scale, like national audiences didn't get to see the Knicks play well enough to get them the 4 seed this year. We like that was a misrepresentation of the team that we put out on the court for 72 games. Yeah. So I wish that more people could have seen the good team ball we were playing, Julius at his peak, because it really was good basketball to watch. But this was just like ugly East Coast, not enough skill basketball.
You know who else played great that I had never seen play at all? The rookie out of SC, Onyeka Okongwu.
Yeah, he had a couple stretches where he like swatted us.
Like he fell out of the ceiling a few times, like these putbacks and blocks were like, holy mackerel.
Yeah, coming off the bench after Capella gives you like 10 strong minutes, that's like a really fun piece. The piece that impressed me the most that I like couldn't hate despite wanting to hate throughout this entire series was DeAndre Hunter. His shots, went in, like like they were clean shots, big clean shots. And his defense, I think that his defense rattled Randle. I think in general, his length, he was just a problem out there. We like him.
He's good. And like shots that you don't probably practice, like when someone passes to you from like 14 feet away and it's like, it just goes straight up and you're like, wow, good on DeAndre Hunter. Like not scared at all of these shots.
No doubt. And there was a lot of shit talking in the series, which I love. Taj Gibson and Trae Young, they were like barking at one another. But I will say that after game 5 ended and like the series was over, it seemed like the two teams like showed love and said, you know, gave their daps and went their separate ways. So there's something to be said for like enjoying that.
Right. So is
like Atlanta, turning it on and off.
Is Atlanta amazing or did the Knicks struggle? Like, do you think the Hawks can give the Sixers a run for their money?
Dude, I'll tell you this. Much like I said when we had Marty and Adam on, and I said that there is a world in which the Suns can beat the Lakers. There is a world. If Embiid is down, you know, it's like, I think there's more talent roster to roster on the Hawks. So he's been the one consistent thing where everyone's like, well, no team in the league has anyone who can stop him. And that in and of itself is the endless advantage. But without him, Now Tobias Harris has to score 35 a game.
Right. Yeah. And I trust just seeing Atlanta's shooting, and I guess, guarding Trae Young with Ben Simmons is a little different than guarding him with Derrick Rose or like Frank Ntilikina. Like the Knicks had no one who can even stay in front of him. He was, they didn't even need to call a screen for him. It was just like, Trae would either shoot a 31 footer or a Hezzy and just get by their guy. The center moves up. It's a pass to Capella. They don't. It's a floater every single time.
It felt like shades of Stockton Malone, where it was just like, you're like doomed if you do and you're doomed if you don't. Like you can guard Stockton and then Malone's wide open, or Stockton can just burn you every single time. It just felt like real helplessness from a Knicks fan standpoint. Like after game one, my only defense, and I kept texting all of you, was just like, put his ass in the ground, like beat him up so that he doesn't feel comfortable. But the fact of the matter is, he moves too fast. You can't put your shoulder in something you can't catch.
Yeah, it's like and trying to catch a mouse in your apartment. Fast. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't just say, like, I'm going to catch it in my hand. You have to, like, double and triple team that mouse if you're going to possibly catch that mouse.
Another thing that people took advantage of Atlanta this season was they made Trae a liability on defense. And the Knicks sort of let Trae... Like, he was guarding Alec Burke or Reggie Bullock in the corner, and Bullock would not move. So Trae was just hanging out on defense, conserving his energy, never getting screened. They don't really run the pick and roll that much, so...
Yeah. I think that's more of an indicator also of our lack of a real playmaker. Like, we had Derrick Rose, who just showed up out of nowhere and just, like, became a, you know, a six-man of the year candidate and just, like, an awesome point guard. Like,
imagine if that trade didn't happen.
We would not be in the playoffs. Fact. Fact. We didn't want him because we wanted just quickly to get more minutes. We just wanted some guy to get minutes over making the playoffs. So it's a massive psychological mountain all Knicks are dealing with, right?
Yeah.
To understand what's good, what's bad, what we're rooting for, what we're disappointed in, all of that we're still trying to parse out right now.
It's like you guys had too many point guards and no point guards at all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I think that was the Trae Young factor. If we had a point guard who could just run him around and just like make him dance on defense, it would be a different game. But we ultimately didn't have that. We have mostly shooting guards, power forwards, and Derrick Rose.
Okay, so now Julius Randle is now entering his final year of a 3-year, $60 million deal that people made fun of the Knicks for even giving him $20 million a year. And then this year, everyone's like, see, he's underpaid. And now it's like the pendulum swung back where it's like, okay, the Knicks can extend him this offseason. Are they going to be like, we love what we saw in the regular season, here's the maximum amount of money? Or are they going to be like, well, I'm okay necessarily with you hanging out in free agency and seeing what you can get after next year?
This front office hasn't bought a max player yet. And... part of me thinks that they're not going to use that on Julius Randle as a thank you. They seem like they had a lot of shrewd deals this year. 1 year for $6 million, two for five, to like Alec Burks, some real players who gave us real minutes. Taj Gibson, vet minimum, you know? My instinct would be that if they were to extend Julius Randle, they would extend him for a little bit more than what he's already getting paid. And they would wait and continue to like spend thriftily until the right superstar comes, because this didn't help. I would say the regular season earned him a lot more money and the playoffs lost him some money. So wherever that shakes out.
Right. Yeah. But then there's also the, you want to show love to your, like Julius Randle might be the face of New York. Like, do the fans love him? Or after that postseason, are they like, we don't necessarily need this guy, but then without Randle and you don't necessarily have Rose, that's the entire team sooner or later. So
I don't know. It's
everybody.
Like, well, that's exactly it. And I think the Knicks used to spend too much and have no one, and then spend nothing and also have no one. And so what they're doing now is actually putting together a competent roster. And so they're just building brick by brick, as opposed to like, all right, let's just get rid of Randle, and I'm sure Giannis will want to sign with us. Like we're the Mecca.
Yeah.
Like, all right, breathe.
Yeah.
So I would say they'd want to keep him, but I don't think they'd want to max him.
Right.
TBD.
Yeah, something like 3 for 90, 4 for 100 zone.
4 for 100, 2 for 58, 2 for 56. Because I could even see Randle, and look, I don't know these guys. These are just like basketball cards that move to me. But I could see, with that being said, I could see Randle being a team player and saying, I don't need a max if we keep building on what we're doing here. Because there is some sort of good
energy.
That would
be great if he said that,
That exact sentence. As a matter of fact, let's get his email address.
I don't need the max. Yeah, and his agent would agree too. Julius, you don't need the max, baby. Let's just build something awesome in New York.
It's New York. The brand deals will take care of the basketball contract.
Well, actually, Sacramento just offered you $200 million for five.
Let's go to Sacktown.
Yeah.
Let's go to Sacktown.
Instantly.
Always loved Northern California, Central California. Huge Central California.
Central Valley. Great fit there, too. De'Aaron Fox and Julius Randle. Are you kidding me?
Speaking of fits, though, that is the one thing that I just don't know, and it's weird. We have the 19th pick, the 21st pick, and the 32nd pick, and $60 million to spend in the offseason. That's what the Knicks have, and I have no idea what we should be prioritizing, and that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Holy Grail is Mr. Leonard out in California, who might be opting out himself and thinking, maybe I don't want to be a Los Angeles Clipper for life. Those 2 years were fun. I mean, a lot of it depends on what happens literally tomorrow versus the Mavericks. But Kawhi Leonard.
What we know about Kawhi and cold weather, though, he doesn't usually last a year.
He's usually cold weather.
He's in San Diego right now. New York winters can be brutal, and New York basketball games can be brutal. It's a tough sell.
You're right. But how much does he like the Clippers? That could be. I don't know if he's the kind of guy that's like, I'm fucking here. Let's build something. Let's get over the hump. Or he's like, I don't like what I see. I think I'm out.
And that's a personal how I feel about the state of the team type thing. Neither one of us can speak to that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Pivoting to that series for a second.
Okay.
What a weird series, huh?
I've been loving it. First two games, Dallas wins in Los Angeles. Clippers cannot stop Luka Doncic.
Nope.
They're like the Knicks couldn't stop Trae Young, but the Clippers have the best two perimeter defenders in the NBA, potentially, historically, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George. They are bouncing off of this 22-year-old Slovenian phenom. Cannot slow him down.
No answer.
No answer at all. Kawhi, and they're playing great.
Kawhi's the most physically and mentally gifted basketball player we've maybe ever seen on the defensive end. No answer.
No answer. Then they go to Dallas, and they continue playing well, but they're able to slow Luka or the other players down enough where the Clippers win two games to Dallas.
But they were down 12 in the first half in game three. And I don't know what changed.
It was 30-11.
Yeah, right. It was blowout territory. It was what's happening? Kawhi is on the Knicks roster tomorrow. And then suddenly, they were just some time out. They were should we start playing now? And they're okay, we'll start playing now.
Well, the leads in that game mean so very little. It's insane. Mm-hmm. After watching a Lakers-Suns game where a six-point lead felt 25. How are we ever going to make two threes in a row to stop? And it was just a slugfest. Then I turn on the Mavericks Clippers game. It's three threes just happen instantly. A 10-point lead goes down to one. Four and ones. It seems like they're scoring in 8 to 12-point chunks. So a 10-point lead with 3 minutes left did not mean anything last night. Reggie Jackson hits a three. Paul George and one. Kawhi and one. And it's a one-point game now. I'm holy shit, that happened fast.
This series and the Portland-Denver series both really feel like it embodies West Coast basketball. And the Knicks-Atlanta series really feels like it embodied East Coast basketball.
And the Lakers-Suns series was such a slugfest. Difficult to score. Everybody is getting hurt, mentally, physically crawling towards the fucking finish line of these series. while Damian Lillard is shooting 55 points, Jokic is 38-11. The scores are 147-140.
The best basketball experience I've watched in a while. We'll get there. If you could predict, though, so the series, the home team has lost all five games so far.
Pretty
if
awesome.
If you could predict how this series, and I know that you hate the Clippers and you're biased.
That's
but
right.
That aside, the basketball person who watches the games, how does this series end? Do the Clippers win in game six, and then do they finally take it at home?
My heart wants Dallas to finally put them away in games. Like, I think Dallas has to win game six.
Well, sure.
Even though they've won every single game in LA, I think this is like their one opportunity. Like, crowd nuts, Clippers rattled. And like, we know Clippers in an elimination game do not have the mental fortitude. Like, we've seen them literally fall
traditionally
apart.
They have not. Correct.
And Kawhi is not playing well in the fourth quarter. I've been seeing stats of like him in the clutch
oddly
in this series, like 1-for-8, cannot shoot, a lot of turnovers. Even last night's game, he had a game winning or game tying three. Air ball. No,
but let's chill.
Nothing.
But also let's chill, because they wouldn't have been that close without Kawhi Leonard for the first three quarters.
No, or these last two seasons.
Correct.
I just think it has to happen tomorrow. But for me, like, the Clippers are the better team, and thus I think they will figure it out and win, just like I thought they would those middle two games in Dallas, and that happened. So I just assume it'll happen again, but... Yeah.
It's weird how we clutch onto our like first initial takes. Like, it's so hard for us to still, even though we've seen Dallas win three games already, and I'm not saying you and I mean like anyone who talks basketball, just like has such a hard time being like, well, I've seen Dallas win three games now. Like, yes, I think they should win this game. Like, it's time. Like, that's how I feel about the Suns game six, where it's like, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
And I think I know what to expect. And yet, like, we still are like, the Clippers have something to show us. They still have like a couple tricks in the bag. It's like, what bag? We've seen it. Like, they lose a lot too.
Well,
so it's fat.
These series change so much. Like, the talking about the Lakers Suns series, like when the Suns won game one, it just seemed like the Suns are more physical. They're better. They have the Lakers number. Then the Lakers win two games in a row. It's like, okay, the Lakers are going to win a championship. They figured it out. AD's here. We're going to win 4-1. AD gets hurt. The Suns destroy us in the second half of game four and game five. And that's like, all right, that series is over. The Lakers are done. Let's talk about rebuild. Like, if the Lakers win tonight, it'll go right back to like, okay, the Lakers could do this with just one more game and we win that and we're off the races.
Do you know what this series reminds me of? This is the Lakers series. It reminds me of hockey with power plays, where each team has just like been on a power play this whole time.
Depending on like, Chris Paul or AD's injury.
Yes. Yes, so Chris Paul gets knocked out, and he's essentially out for the first two games, very clearly injured on the court. So the Lakers are on the power play, and they mostly do what they have to do.
Took advantage of it.
That's right. And then AD goes down, and now the Suns are on the power play. And this one's a five-minute power play. Like, Paul's was a two-minute power play. Yeah, this was like, you did something extra wrong. Yeah, some sort of bad high sticking where it's like, you got to stay in the box for an
extra. Maybe even a, what's it called when it's 5-on-3? A double power play?
Sure, let's call it a double power play. Yeah. It seems like right now the Suns are in the midst of their double power play.
Correct.
And I've had groin injuries before, and I could not participate in team sports. Now, granted, this was high school soccer, but that being said, like, you have to run and specifically pivot to plant your foot on a sore groin is devastating.
Yes.
It sucks.
Yes.
And you can't push through it either.
No.
Like, you can't like be like, ah, too bad. And you keep pushing.
Yeah.
It's like you're done if it's like a grade two or even like a pretty bad grade one. So this power play, if we get to see both teams at even strength for the final two games, that would be most ideal. But how do you feel? How do you feel? I mean, are you optimistic that AD plays game six, which
no.
is in a few hours?
Yeah. No, I'm not optimistic. Yeah. He was like laboring through, even before he hurt his groin, he didn't look great because of the
same side.
He was also hyperextended his knee. Like, it's not like fully healthy adult male who happened to tweak something. No, this guy was already hurt. And what hurts the most is that they were playing so well with him. He was playing so well. He had like 35 and 10 and just looked dominant and pounding his chest and I'm back, and they had no answers, and then he hurt himself.
I tell you what, game five was a tough watch, dog.
It felt like the end of the series. It felt like Lakers Celtics game six, like they were going to Gatorade shower Monty Williams, and then it's like, oh wait, we're playing again? I thought that was it. I thought this series was over, but it wasn't.
Where did your skill go? Where did the Lakers skills go?
They couldn't make
a shot. They looked like kid brothers.
Yes.
Like, You and like that's on offense, they couldn't make a shot. But on defense, like once the ball got past you, everyone was like, oh, well, and then they would just jab. It was like, where's the help defense? Where's any sort of big man? Like your team is so huge one day and like Ben McLemore the next.
I think we couldn't score. So like Frank Vogel was like, all right, let's try Markieff Morris. All right, let's try Ben McLemore. All right, let's try Marc Gasol. And it's just like by the time we got to like down 26, it's like this is we emptied the gun over here. We have no other humans. Like we need Anthony Davis and he's not playing. Also, I was listening to a Lakers-specific podcast, and they're like, there's no worse team in the NBA than the Lakers down 20. Like, at that point, like, we give up. We don't run. Like,
LeBron's
what makes the
walking
Lakers
to the
great?
Locker room.
Yes,
LeBron is leaving the arena. Team.
Yeah. What makes the Lakers so great is, like, when it gets close and it's competitive and you have LeBron and AD and they're tuned in 100% and we're all fucking on a string and defending well, it's so hard to score against the Lakers.
Yeah.
If they need, like, Dallas or the Clippers to, like, make up 14 points in 4 minutes, it's not happening. It's and KCP was like a sneaky, another annoying injury that nobody's really talking about, is our best defender who can also shoot. He's not playing either.
And he also just gives you 30 decent minutes. And I'm like, and I mean decent as a compliment. Like it's
and
just
he's
like
guarding
right
Booker. He would be guarding their best player and he's not out there and he would be hopefully making shots, though he wasn't this series and he's not doing that. It just seems like the Lakers are at the end of a 2 year long adventure. And other teams are like, all right, let's get started. Let's fucking sprint up and down the court.
Does have like, that energy.
KCP's hurt. AD tore his groin. LeBron's coming off an ankle injury. It's like a MASH unit out there. There was like that one. There was a one play in the last, or it was game four in LA. We were up 11 in that game, by the way. Like that was like the beginning of the end for the Lakers. I'm like, all right, we win this game, win in Phoenix, rest for a week, take on Denver.
Different
I can see
world.
The path.
Different world.
Look. Dennis like tweaked his ankle and was like hobbling up the court, and then like KCP like hyperextended his knee, and we had like two players like on the ground, and then like this either happened as AD was in the back like getting his groin. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Like this is all falling apart.
Sometimes
in 30
second fast.
Chunk. It happened very fast.
Sometimes it happens real fast and
but
real
Dennis,
ugly. And
Dennis wasn't there in the finals last year, so he doesn't necessarily have the wear and tear excuse like an AD or a KCP
that's
played
right
into October and then started again in December. He
and
just
that's one thing that
didn't look very good at all.
As a non-Laker fan, I will show you sympathy and grace by saying that I don't think there's ever been a harder 2 years in the NBA's history to win back to back. Maybe there was war
right
1 year and I didn't like consider it or something, but like the way these two calendars worked, from them going to the bubble, playing all those extra games in the bubble, then by just logic, having the shortest offseason and then starting again and doing it again, that's definitely the hardest back-to-back you could be asked to do. So I get how they could be beat up right now.
Yeah, it could be worse also. We could be Miami, who lost in the finals but still had to play the same amount of games. And then, I mean, you saw them against Milwaukee. They were the same thing. Injured all year, no continuity, no chemistry, swept.
Yes. So then my question to you is, same question I had earlier. What is your expectation of Game 6 and Game 7 in this series? If you could take off your Lakers fan hat for a second and just say, knowing what you know.
I think tonight it's close, but I could see it going either way. I could see like a game like Game 4 where the Suns are just in control the entire game, like up 10 to 20, and then the Lakers make some sort of like, you know, valiant effort at the last minute or two to like, oh, it's a 7-point game with 2 minutes left. The crowd's into it. Chris Paul, Devin Booker make a three or two to cut it, to seal our fate.
Is LeBron that? Is he that much more? Is he that much better than the other players on the court that he can actually win the game tonight with his like peak performance game?
Well, that's what I thought for Game 5, and he gave it
a
good old college try for about 8 minutes. We were up 10 to 5.
No free throws. Free throws in the first half. It was like, uh-oh.
But then a lot of the times he would like muster up so much energy, spin into the post, get triple teamed, kick it out to a wide open Dennis Schroeder, wide open KCP, wide open Alex Caruso, and they would miss their corner threes, and he would just be like, all right, back on defense. Oh, they just made a three. Oh, Jesus Christ, backbreakers. So, like, we can't overcome AD's injury and poor shooting and LeBron, like, being hobbled. Like, two of these three things have to resolve themselves. I don't think we'll have AD. I don't know how we'll start making wide-open corner threes. Hopefully we do. and mm-hmm. hopefully we get it. I want, you know, like one more, give us one more attempt at a game seven. Give us one more high note, an exciting game six at home to go off of into next year. Otherwise, it's just a really disheartening end to a kind of a snake bitten season, it seems.
Yeah, if the Lakers lose tonight, we're done with buckets, right? The season's over. We don't need to talk about the other teams.
Oh, no, yeah, I'm not. I'm a hockey fan after tonight if the Lakers lose.
Yeah, yeah. I used a power play analogy before, so I'm also a hockey, big hockey
fan.
Are
the Leafs, Canadians, who's still in the... Are the Islanders still alive?
Yeah, maybe Pavel Bure is still out there. Mario Lemieux. Keith Tkachuk.
Keith Tkachuk.
That's right. Seven consonants in a row. Seven consonants in a row.
No, I will always... I've already mentally prepared myself for worst possible case situation, which is
okay.
Lakers losing tonight, Clippers advancing to the next round. Mm-hmm. And the Clipper hate will fuel me for at least another round. I can watch mm-hmm. them hopefully lose to Utah. Utah's mm-hmm. looking great.
Mm-hmm.
I can bet some money on the Bucks. I think the Bucks will beat the Nets. That'll give me mm-hmm. something in the second round. But if the finals are like Utah versus the Brooklyn Nets, like
that's who I've got in what my finals.
What are we doing at that? Are we watching games 2 and 3 of a Nets for Jazz?
Sure. For sure. We want to see if Rudy Gobert, the big man, can take advantage of the Nets' biggest weakness. That's what we want to see.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we can look ahead at the teams that are playing really well because our teams are either not or have already been eliminated.
Right.
The Bucks look great. The Nets look solid. They're playing each other. What could be the NBA Finals embedded into round two of the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Yeah.
You think the Nets will win. I think the Bucks will win.
Yeah. And I mean, after watching, I thought the Nets would win before this series even happened. And after watching the Bucks' first series, goddamn, if they play like that, it seems like they're going to be a big problem. Like they this are. Is going to be, this is so great for basketball fans that we get this. Like it's hitting me right now as I talk into this microphone, how much fun that's just going to be to watch game after game after game.
Yes.
I'm thrilled about it.
Yeah.
I'm realizing now this is awesome, but I'm so thrilled about it. It's hitting me right now.
It'll be a great, amazing series of like two teams that both have like kind of something to prove. Like everyone, mm-hmm. if you're a Nets hater, it's like, they can't play defense. They have no chemistry. These three random all-stars were put together. They're not mm-hmm. a real team. The Bucks, obviously, you know, they haven't done anything in the playoffs forever. They got Drew Holiday.
But they've been supposed to. They've supposed to have been doing things in the playoffs for a long time, and they haven't. And here we are again. But Drew Holiday is obviously the piece.
Sell me on the Brooklyn Nets. I've already put some sweet, sweet Bovada Bucks on the Milwaukee Bucks to win the championship. But tell me why that was a mistake. Why do you think the Nets will beat the Milwaukee Bucks?
In just a few words, it's because the Milwaukee Bucks lost Dante DiVincenzo. There's no coming back.
Yeah.
There's no coming back from losing Dante DiVincenzo. The Nets are going to feast on that hole. Noah. I mean, what do I need to say that any other basketball fan hasn't heard everywhere? Like, how do you just... I can't assume that a team with Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving will lose 4 games in a series. Like, I wouldn't assume that a team with just Kevin Durant would lose 4 games in a series.
Yeah, even though it does happen sometimes. If somebody gets hurt, or maybe the rest of his teammates not very good, or they're coming mm-hmm. up against a historic opponent. Mm-hmm. But this is not necessarily the 2016 Golden State Warriors that they're playing. They're playing a Milwaukee Bucks team that hasn't really done anything.
Right. And like... the question for me is going to be who, like, when they are asked to guard a big man, what do they do? Because it's not DeAndre Jordan, and Nick Claxton can give you minutes. So, like, that's the one thing where if somehow a big man can come in, and that's where you wanted the Embiid of it all to come in, or maybe Giannis to come in and just absolutely show off their weakness and do it for 4 games. That's the one way I could see them losing. But the firepower is just so insane. Yeah. I mean, what makes you so confident? Is it just the defense of it all? Defense wins championships for the Bucks?
I think the Bucks are more, they have the baked in chemistry of a real team, the DNA of like a team. And after seeing like the continuity suffer with the Lakers all year of like, mm-hmm. let's try this lineup. Oh, somebody's hurt. We couldn't try this lineup. This guy doesn't know how to play with this guy. We don't mm-hmm. necessarily know how these guys play together. After seeing it manifest itself in LA, although it's more glaring now because we can't shoot and Anthony Davis is still hurt. There is something to be said about a Milwaukee team that was pretty healthy all year and has played together with Chris Middleton, Giannis,
these lineups.
Brooke Lopez. These have 3 years of embedded know-how and knowing how to play together. And
whereas the inverse is the Nets, who have only played 12 games together.
Yes, exactly. Right. And it's like, all right, we'll try a James Harden ISO. Oh, that worked out well. Right. We'll try a Kevin Durant one. And the Bucks line up so well with them because, like, if you were to choose one person to guard Kevin Durant, it would probably be Giannis in the entire NBA. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so who would you have to guard James Harden? You would probably choose Jrue Holiday, and they have him too. So it's like you can almost see a path forward where the Brooklyn Nets – other players have to beat you, and I really like a Chris Middleton type versus a Joe Harris or who else is on Bruce Brown, Blake Griffin.
Yeah, Jeff Green, Blake Griffin. Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be funny if the Brooklyn Nets just sort of farted a team together and won a championship, and everyone's like, oh, we've been working on a team for 10 years, and we had a plan, and Kevin Durant just accidentally chose the Nets because he liked Kyrie Irving, and they won a championship, but I just don't see that happening.
Is there enough fans to warrant a parade in New York City, or do they just like have a parade in like L.A.?
Well, I joked because they had to bribe people to buy tickets to their playoff games. They offered them free beer. So I said,
that's so nuts.
The Nets would be the first parade to like have to like bribe people with free pizza. Like, you guys got to come out. There you go. We're having a party. Like, honestly, don't bring anything. We were getting it catered. Just show up.
I didn't even know you said that. And
I mean, they might get booed at their own parade. They're the most hated team in their own city.
It's insane that All-Star Game tickets cost anywhere from $800 to $2,000 and Brooklyn Nets tickets cost $10. It's just a different jersey. It's mental. It's go to the game if you're in New York. If you enjoy the sport of basketball, go to that game. Go.
And maybe they didn't necessarily want to see them destroy the Boston Celtics. I can understand that. Like, you're saving your cash for that Bucks, the Sixers series if Embiid is healthy.
But the tickets are $30. Just go. Who cares who they're playing? It's Kevin Durant. You're watching some of the greatest of all time play together. Just go.
Cheaper than a preseason Laker game for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so the finals, you have Brooklyn on one side, and you think Utah comes out of the West, huh?
Dude, because I think they're the sleeping giant. I mean, A, they're the one seed, so like put some respect on my name. But B, like, they are really talented at most positions. Like, they are so balanced. And this is what makes the playoffs great from like a casual fan's perspective. We're watching the Knicks. We're watching the Lakers. We're watching what's on TNT. We're flipping through League Pass from time to time. But the playoffs, you watch almost every team's game. And you really watch them play. And the Jazz are just, they're just so skilled at every position. Like, I'm watching, I'm like, oh, this is the best basketball team. Other teams do other things more flashy and well, but like, this is the best basketball team. Like, they have plays, they have like a true big man. Conley is so legit. D. Mitchell, when he gets 30 minutes, is so awesome. Yeah, they could win it all, frankly.
Yeah, but they have what they lack, or what they have in depth, they sort of lack in like the best players at the top. Like, you think of the Lakers last year, LeBron and Anthony Davis, the Clippers, who were title favorites, had Paul George and Kawhi. The Utah Jazz probably have the worst duo when compared to other duos. Like, you take Giannis and Jrue Holiday, you take Embiid and Ben Simmons, you take Durant and Kyrie. You'd put, if this was a 2-on-2 game, you'd take them all over Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert.
See, to me, I kind of push back on that, and I would say that they are similar to the Bucks construction. They just have less of a history where people are saying like, this hasn't worked. Because I could argue that like Conley, Mitchell, and Gobert can pretty much stack up against Giannis, Middleton, and Jrue Holiday. And then it comes down to who else do you have? They have the sixth man of the year. They have the runner-up sixth man of the year. Then they still have Bogdanovich, who's a scorer. Rosenthal, who played defense. I mean, they just, you just watch it and you're like, damn, this is good basketball. The ease of Rudy Gobert's shots, like, he shoots from 2 feet in and they're all dunks. It's just like such clean, boring basketball. You're just like, well, shit, this wins. This is boring, winning basketball.
Yeah.
So the Lakers are one approach. Get the two biggest stars and go, go, go. And then this is like, hey, we're a little boring, but we're totally fundamental. And that might be it this year.
It's also like the best shooters. Like, you're bringing in guys. I watched the Lakers struggle to like get anything open, corner threes to go in. Mm-hmm. And then I watched someone like Utah, and it's just like, ball zips around to a 45% mm-hmm. three-point shooter. You're like, holy shit, Bogdanovich can't miss. Holy shit, Clarkson can't miss. Mm-hmm. Royce O'Neal just hit 5 threes. Mike Conley just hit 7 threes. I'm like, this is an offense that's firing on all cylinders, and then they also have the defensive player of the year in Rudy Gobert. So maybe they are the most complete team.
It's nuts. And they say that like March Madness is like a guards tournament where if you have the best guard, you'll probably get to the Final Four. You'll at least get to the Elite Eight because you should have the best guard. The NBA playoffs are starting to feel like that too. And it doesn't have to be the best point guard, but just like the best guard play is so comforting because like both of our teams are struggling with our guard play right now, like consistency of guard play. And we both have 3 and 4 losses. But like the teams that just zip the ball and keep it moving, they don't panic. They don't just like have 5-minute droughts where they don't score. Like those are the teams that keep advancing. And it feels like the Jazz have a lot of that.
Yeah. The Lakers have to count LeBron as their point guard. Otherwise, they don't have a great point guard. But like LeBron never has a great point guard. It's like he dragged Mario. He never has a great point guard or a center. He like drags Mario Chalmers and Zydrunas Ilgauskas to the finals. Or last year it was Rondo and JaVale McGee. Like as long as you have like some elite talent somewhere, the other ones can take a backseat a little bit.
His issue is that he could be the best at any position. It's just, what position do I have to play on this team? Yeah. And on the Lakers, it's like you have to basically run the whole offense. You have to be a quarterback.
That's right. And I also wonder how much his ankle is still bothering him, because there are times where he's driving and not dunking over people. He's sort of getting like, they're bringing a help defender and he has no answer for that. So again, it's a lot of kickouts to a wide open Laker player who can't make a shot.
I will say in Game 3 was the first signs of, oh shit, he's playing downhill. Oh shit, he's pivoting and turning and going up for like, he's in the low block, he's posting up. And when you can post up and have fadeaways, you could push off your ankle. So I was like, he's good now, the Lakers are going to win. Like, that was the first time internally where I was like, the Suns are going to lose now because LeBron is now LeBron.
Yeah, we won game four by 14.
Yeah, then game 5, it just seemed like lethargy. Like that one weird series he had, I think maybe it was on the Cleveland Cavs, where he just like kind of quit on the team or was just like, I'm computing early that we're not going to win, and I'm going into like shutdown mode.
Yeah.
And that really seemed to exist game 5, which is disappointing, but maybe it's all preservation.
Yeah. Like, I remember the first year the Warriors got Durant, LeBron was like, I'm going to just fucking put all my energy and effort into this first game. He had that 50-point triple-double the J.R. Smith game.
It was a monster stat
and
line.
And they still lost.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm done. And they got,
you can't
they
do that again.
Yeah. They lost I think they got swept that year. Maybe it was
quote-unquote broke his hand in the locker room that game, punched the door, but then wore a cast like 2 weeks later, foreshadowing of the dramatic LeBron to come. Unbelievable. Well,
LeBron gets energy from wins, just like like if he passes out to a Laker in the corner and they make a three, he's sprinting back on D. He's like, that was awesome, we made a good play. If that Laker misses a layup or misses a shot, bad body.
Same energy, same energy in the wrong direction.
That's right. Yeah.
And if it goes down too low, it almost can't be pulled back out.
Exactly.
That's what it like just walks. It like turns off and walks to the locker room.
That's why I'm wondering, like, was game 5 so low that he's already like, all right, let me figure out next year. We'll call this year a wash and we'll take, you know, we'll have June, July, August, October, September all off, and we'll come back next year and worry about that when it happens.
I wonder, only he knows that. But as a Lakers fan, just from a contract standpoint, you've locked them both into long-term contracts. Does that still feel like that's what we want? That's still the right play?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only... that they won a championship when they were both healthy. This year, won't. Unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Next year, you hope for health. And then you just fill in the pieces with the best shooters money can buy, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like the last year and the year before. This is the Laker way.
Yeah,
it's the Laker way.
You get two of hopefully the best 5 to 10 players in the NBA, and figure out the rest. You'll pick up Rondo if necessary. Rondo had a great moment yesterday when he was staring at Kawhi after that missed three.
It's great to be more alpha than Kawhi, because Kawhi's the best, which usually means that you're the king, but Rondo's like, nuh-uh. Rajon's house.
Rajon is playing fucking crunch time, end of game minutes.
He should. He should be. I love what Reggie Jackson is doing on the court. I feel like he's getting no love. I do like the way Reggie Jackson is playing, but Rondo's the one that should be there.
Well, that's the game plan. It's like, shut down everybody. Reggie Jackson, go for it. Like, have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Enjoy yourself.
Batum?
Yeah.
Yeah, Terrence Mann, like, have a field day. Get out there.
That was an insane end of, we'll end right here, but the end of that game 5 in L.A., No timeouts were called. It felt like an awesome March Madness moment where Dallas tried to make a shot to extend the lead. They missed, and Ty Lue's like, yeah, let's fucking go. And Paul George fucking sprints down the court, hands it to Terrence Mann, who's seemingly open. Luka tries to get there. I mean, Terrence Mann passes to Nick Batum. There's still 9 seconds left in this very important game. Batum misses a fucking layup. Dallas gets the free throws, and that's it. That's a wrap.
Yeah. We can't end. We will end right now, but we have to at least, and I know it's going to be hard for you, give Dame Lillard a little bit of shine for what the hell he did. Damian Lillard. So he plays the point guard.
Oh, yeah. The Portland 1-for-10 performance. I didn't want to mention that just because they still won the game. So
No. He had like 25. He had like 55 points on like 24 shots.
Oh, the game after the 1-for-10. Yeah, yeah. Because the game before he went 1-for-10. But nobody.
It was
really
one where they were like consistently down 10 with like 1 minute to go, and he would just score 10 points somehow.
That's right.
Again and again. Yeah. Multiple overtimes. Literally a generational talent. I read somewhere, someone asked, is this what it was like watching Michael Jordan? Where it was like, well, you're not going to win because I'm on this team. So,
well, the funny thing is that they lost. So it wasn't quite Michael Jordan. And also MJ like rarely shot threes. So it wasn't quite. Mm-hmm. It almost felt kind of like the 2006 Lakers with Kobe, where he's like, I need to like fucking manufacture some insane playmaking here to keep us close, because
win or loss,
every time I pass, it doesn't really seem to lead anywhere. And
but
he had a few great passes too.
It exceeded human expectation of other human. Like, it got to the point where it's like, there's just no way this one could go in. And like, he stole it with 5 seconds left. He's got to make the three. Always made the three. And it was just an awesome game. And like, yes, the Nuggets won, but like, Dame is like, he's somehow grown larger than the Blazers, where it's like Dame and the Blazers. Like, he's the front man, and like, they're like the background singers. And we'll just still go for the show, the Dame show at this point.
Yes.
And he delivers.
Well, you hope that he gets hot, because when he does, he's literally unguardable. And it's weird that he ever passes it, because even if he's being double teamed, he can do a step back from 40 feet and it either like banks in, swishes in, goes in, he gets fouled and eventually goes in. Like, it seems like he's unguardable, and yet there are still these big moments where he's like, I got to trust my teammates right here, and he passes it to CJ McCollum, who steps out of bounds.
Totally. Oh, God, yes, that hurt. There was one other pass. We're giving Dame shine. I want to give Jokic shine. His pass to Porter Jr. in the corner. Did you see that pass that floated over like three defenders perfectly?
Yes.
Like
yes.
So perfect. When that ball went over them, I was like, I don't even care if Porter makes this shot. That pass was art. That was so awesome.
It seems like him and LeBron are the only ones that see like the third and fourth progression, like while the other two are happening. Like, they're both guiding players to move like a chess piece, and like, all right, you move here so I can throw over the defender so that it lands in his shooting pocket. And like, these players, like Michael Porter Jr. probably just sees a very crowded key, and all of a sudden the ball just emerges out of nowhere into his shooting
right
like, whoa, I guess I'm open.
I guess it's Jokic said right. It's and like Trained LeBron it. Throws darts, and Jokic throws like soft rainbows. Like, he just like floats it, and it's like time and space and athleticism says someone's gotta steal the ball by the time it gets to the shooter, and every time it's in the shooter's basket. It's just like
Series. Just like LeBron is very chiseled and strong, and Jokic is very soft looking. That's the shots and the passes too. Like, Jokic is banging down low, and his release point is so high, it arcs above the backboard and barely hits the net when it falls through.
I would say that LeBron is an inverse of him, but an even bigger inverse of him is Dame Lillard, who's like 6'1", shredded, and shoots from 50 feet. It's just like, this is such a fun David and Goliath, but each one's secretly Goliath. It's like little Goliath versus big Goliath.
Yeah, there's no Davids. The Davids are the other players on the team.
Just various sizes of Goliaths in this. Yeah. In this
Who do you think wins that series?
I have in my gambling bracket Denver in 7.
Seems very likely right now.
It's either Denver in 7 or Denver in 6, one or the other. And yeah, my heart wants to see more Dame, but my gut says it's Denver.
Yeah. But
this could. I was just going to say, this could be like, it feels like Dirk. He feels like Dirk, where it's like, you're going to win the NBA championship? Like, we did not see this coming. And
I think if Murray were playing, that would be more likely. I just don't know if he has enough firepower around him. He's doing a lot with what he's got.
But they scored 150. last game. Like, that's firepower.
I guess they don't have any defensive firepower. Like, neither team could stop the other one at all.
No, that's true. Yeah, they'd be better with Murray, but we'll see.
All right, sweet. Good check-in. Again, if this is the end of the Lakers season tonight, you guys won't hear from us again. I'm deleting all social media and this podcast.
Rest in peace.
If they win, then yeah, I think we'll see you guys soon. Billy.
Yeah, we'll probably record another episode tomorrow.
For sure. An emergency, an emergency podcast. It's an emergency if the Lakers win tonight.
They're all emergency podcasts.
all right, who you got? Where can people find you?
People can find us on the No Joke podcast this week. Amir, you, me, and Adam Lustig.
That's right.
Yes, that episode comes out tomorrow. You can find us on the No Joke podcast. Check that out, please.
Wow, that's exciting. So me, Billy, and then also Adam. So me and Billy are in two podcasts this week, and then we have Adam for the No Joke podcast of it.
Would you say that it was one of the more fun podcasts you've ever been on, Amir?
I didn't know what to expect, and I think I left with a smile on my face in a great way. It was pleasant. I was pleasantly surprised, and I think the audience will be as well.
All right. He was expecting to be disappointed, folks. That's how I heard it. Turned out okay, though.
And I left in pure joy. Set your bars low, people. Just like tonight, I think the Lakers will lose. And I hope to God, prove me wrong, LeBron James. Prove me wrong. All right. We'll see you guys soon enough. Bye, everybody.
Let's go, Lakers.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.